if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen,
country, and video games. BRB UK.
Worse teeth,
better accents.
Hello, hello, and indeed ahoy hoy, and welcome to episode 342 of BRB UK. It's a full house this week, for we have me, I am Dan, we have Coalman, say hello Coalman.
Hi!
And we have Mr. November, say hello Mr. November.
Hello Mr. November.
I like this, it feels right.
It feels so, so right, but we also know he's so wrong. So, Tim.
Yes?
Talk me through.
Right.
If indeed you were Mr. November.
Which I'm not.
What would your posing pouch of choice be?
Cucumber.
Coloured or shaped?
Definitely.
Or painted?
All three.
Right.
Ladies, get that in your commentary.
Wow, that went places, didn't it? That went places.
Also, just for the record, I believe last week you inferred that we had not been invited to a Borderlands party thing.
Were we?
I don't know.
Technically, and this speaks volumes about the level we are at, I was not invited, but I was welcome to come without an invitation.
Ah, so you lost the email.
No, he was off seeing Terrorvision.
Well, yeah. 1 week Terrorvision, previous week, terrible problems.
How is 1994?
Yeah, it's great. Like, it's the first time they'd toured for ages. Myself and Rick had noticed in a drunken conversation through Spotify one evening that we both liked Terrorvision.
I was listening to Terrorvision today. No story on this. Just random playlist.
That is the coolest of stories. Thank you, Coalman.
Basically, yeah, they played their album, which is, yeah, most people would probably consider their best album, but hey.
What? A live band played tracks from their recently released or to-be-released album?
No. It wasn't. It wasn't even that. It's just their old album, which was even better. That's exactly why. That is exactly the album I wanted them to play. So, yeah, it was good. It was a really good, fun evening.
Was the gig at Coco's?
No.
That's a pity.
I know what that place is.
I know, we discussed this last week.
I know, I just want to show off.
Although, if you want to speak about Coco in the 90s, yeah, you said Camden Palais. When it was Camden Palais, I had a very good night. One of my favourite gigs ever, because I stage dived for the first and only time I've ever stage dived in my life. And
that was the last time the Spice Girls ever played the Camden Palace.
Oh, no, I was going to say he was going to see young upstarts The Who.
No, it was very 90s, and I think it was a little bit past their time as well, but it was EMF.
Whoa.
We've had this conversation. I remember this.
Whoa.
Wow, that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
There you go.
Which is actually, Tim, you do make that noise quite a bit. Clearly had a deep impact on your psyche, that show. So you know, don't do drugs. Winners don't do drugs.
Speaking of every mother's favourite,
talking of mother's favourites, what?
EMF, every mother's favourite.
Oh, electromagnetic felching is what I thought it stood for. I'm not quite sure how you did. I'm now thinking about that in too much detail.
Talking about electromagnetic felching, how about those really weird, disgusting, violent fatalities in Mortal Kombat 11?
Right, so I don't think there's a felchtality. I don't think there is a felchtality.
I thought you put in the Konami code and...
No, when you felch, that's not what you put in.
How did we manage to go into this in the most
low-grade
possible...
Because I'm hosting the podcast, Tim, that's how.
Oh, right, yeah, sorry. 2 weeks off. It's just, you know, surprising what you forget in the time.
Right, Netherrealm, which actually is not a bad segue.
Last week we spoke about the allegations of Netherrealm Studios, who are the developers behind Mortal Kombat, the series, and Injustice. And we touched on it a little bit, but we didn't go over it too much because it was fresh news at the time. And there were some rumors which did get kind of proven incorrect. Basically, there's been allegations over from one former employee who has referred to the practices at Netherrealm Studios as predatory and abusive behavior. And there was all these other kinds, there was rumors of a suicide and all these kind of things. It didn't quite prove correct, but this is why we're talking about it now. So NeverRealm Studios have actually been to Variety and had an interview with them, and they gave a explanation saying that they greatly appreciate and respect all of their employees and prioritize creating a positive work experience. And as an equal opportunity employer, they encourage diversity and constantly take steps into reducing crunch time to their employees. And then they are actively looking into all allegations as they take these matters very seriously. And they're also working to improve the company environment. Along with all the myriad of different allegations last week, the main one seemed to be crunch, yet again, which we did touch on last week. People getting overworked, people not necessarily doing overtime that is forced upon them, but heavily implied that they should do it for fear of losing their job or maybe not getting the pay rise, not getting the move to the next department. You know, it's a typical thing that we're seeing more and more. It's existed in video game companies, and not just video games, companies, mostly technology, but we're seeing it brought to light more and more these days.
It's the worst kept secret in video games kind of thing. You know, it's everyone knows that crunch happens in most large companies these days.
Yeah, and not just within the video game industry, within any industry.
Tech firms possibly more guilty of this, but it's pervasive in a lot of industries. We're seeing, you know, possible concerns about that in movie industries and other things, but there's definitely it's definitely having a spotlight shone on it in video games, but it's something that's definitely been a problem for, you know, a large amount of time. It's something that seems to almost be, you know, inherent with the industry, almost, kind of thing. Like, it's crunch is an implied part of a video game development cycle, almost.
Yeah, I mean, I think with any project where there is a hard deadline, there will always be a bit of a scramble to the finish, no matter how well prepared you are. That is a different thing to, however, things being mismanaged to the degree where there is no option but to do that.
Yes, and that is a difference, but also that's largely the factor that leads to a lot of crunch generally in a lot of industries. I'm not excusing it, and I'm not saying it's justified. I'm just saying we're at the point where that is almost openly the case. And at the moment, we're just seeing a bit more of the actual human stories of what that leads to and the pressures that puts on people's lives. And that is obviously not right. And this is something... it's right that we're shining a light on it and it's coming to light, but it's clearly wrong that we're putting people in that situation.
You know, I've worked for a couple of large employers now, one of which was state-run, the other which is not. And, you know, I've noticed a real difference in company culture where going from one organization where it's expected that you're a miserable basically because of the stresses the job puts on you, to one that actually goes, hang on, if you're miserable, you're not happy. And if you're not happy, you're not doing the best work that you can. And we don't want that. So we're actually going to proactively look after our employees. I mean, we don't know the ins and outs of every studio. But, I mean, I do know that these things, by the sounds of it, these things are being managed very, very, very badly.
And they're the people that have been paid a large amount of money to manage the situation badly, seemingly, in a lot of cases at least, manage the situation badly and be paid more money than the people that are putting in the crunch hours and actually doing it. Not in all cases, and there are managers that work themselves there. And look, it's not exactly exclusive to working for a company. I own my own company, I'm my own boss, and there are times where I have to, you know, put in longer hours than I would want to and stay later than I wanted to on that evening and, you know, do other things.
I mean, we could all appreciate that with any job, if you've got a good employer, there is an amount of give and take, right? That, however, doesn't excuse people being put under such pressure that, you know, their whole lives fall apart. And no one should ever be put in that position.
Yeah. As I said, we don't know the ins and outs of this case. And, you know, as I say, just my private business thing, but that extends into video games as well. Like, there are indie game developers I know that put too much pressure on themselves and work stupid crunch type hours when they're working on their own projects. But that's often because they have to work to deadlines and stuff as well. Like,
it's often because they care.
Yeah. And not every person that is putting in hours into crunch in a video game industry is miserable as a result of that. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that it's something that needs to never exist in the video game industry, but it does seem something that needs to be managed and controlled to a more acceptable level, and an establishing what that acceptable level is behind a barrier of rules and regulations that the industry needs to follow as a whole.
But I mean, kind of the other slightly darker side of this is kind of not remunerating people appropriately for their work. And, you know, I think the key thing for any employer that any employer must do is to ensure that the people working for them feel valued, because they are their best asset. There's no two ways about it. And if you don't do that, that is a terrible way to treat human beings, not just employees, just human beings generally. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot that's wrong. I mean, I also think that the video game industry perhaps hasn't quite modernized itself in a slightly ironic way, because that it's gone over the matter of, you know, 10-15 years from essentially a very small cottage industry, which is just a couple of people working their asses off trying to make a pet project of theirs, to a multi-billion dollar enterprise where there's this increased pressure to get the biggest, best thing out all the time. And it hasn't really, the way in which they manage their employees hasn't quite caught up with those expectations, I think.
Yeah, and it's like we say that it's not something that's new to the industry. It's just something that's coming to light more and more in the past 2-3 years. And case in point of which, like, we're starting to reach a boiling point with it, because the first three headlines we have are all to do with, you know, something along this line of misuse of employees. And that includes, and it's all three different things that are taken in very different ways. We've got NetherRealm, who are sort of internally investigating. We've got Riot Games that are currently facing a mass walkout of their employees, because there was a article in Kotaku last year, about 6 months ago, 6-8 months ago, and they went through a bunch of different reports of gender discrimination, harassment, again, crunch issues. Since then, Riot Games has said that two of those are now in pending lawsuits, so they can't comment on them, but the rest are still being investigated internally, and employees haven't been happy with the current action taken and some of the reasoning given, so they've organized a mass walkout. Like, at this moment, Riot Games, they've had over 150 employees walk out in the US, and yesterday Dublin have now joined in that game as well. So Riot Dublin have also walked out. This is two very different ends of the spectrum. You've got one going, okay, yeah, we're internal and we're trying to improve things, and you've got the other one going, yeah, we can't really talk about what we're doing, but, and the employee's gone, stuff you, we're having a protest. And very different ends of the spectrum. But I wanted to bring some kind of focus to that, because Riot Games kind of is being overshadowed by the other two stories of, because NetherRealm's a very big game at the moment with Mortal Kombat 11. Very good game by all accounts, apparently, but it has, sadly has this horrible shadow over it. And then the other one is Randy Pitchford, because we've been talking about Gearbox before and issues with Randy Pitchford. We've spoken about the alleged missing USB drive of porn at a restaurant. We've spoken about how much of a tonge Randy Pitchford is in general.
Well, to be fair, after you're happy enough to run up a massive bar bill, allegedly, after allegedly putting accidentally, allegedly, 12 alleged million dollars allegedly into your alleged bank account, then, you know, hey, you do get a bit forgetful.
Did you say allegedly, Dan?
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. Yeah, there's the issue of the misappropriated funds, allegedly. And also, now this week, even more controversy surrounds Randy Pitchford, to the point where Gearbox today have said that they're doing some investigation into these goings on. But the everyone's reporting on this at the moment, so it's overshadowed Riot Games as well. But
yeah,
I'll give you like the quick version of this, because it is a long story. But first of all, Randy Pitchford's having a weird meltdown, it seems, because
He's had a few Twitter rants this week.
Is he running for president of the United States or something?
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he's written it on the. Someone check the back of his waistcoat, see if he takes his jacket off and says, "Pitchford, yeah, but let's not do that. That's a horrible dream."
No, let's not do that.
Anyway, yeah, so he's been having a meltdown. Game Informer, I think he's had a go at, because he basically went on stage for the reveal of Borderlands 3 and went, "No microtransactions."
I mean, to be fair, he phrased it very, 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 very badly and not very clearly. But there was clearly two bits to that sentence. One which intimated that, yeah, there might be cosmetic things, but that there would be, you know, again, I think it all comes down to how you conceptualize the term microtransactions. And you know, if it's, you know, where do microtransactions end and cool things to make your character look a bit different begin? Are they the same thing? I'm not defending him.
Paying a small amount of money for a small thing in a video game.
Yeah, exactly. So, indeed. But I mean, it's kind of, that is, I agree, the dictionary definition of it. However, was he conceptualizing it to mean something different?
Basically, he explained it very badly. Game Informer went, actually, don't get your hopes up. There are microtransactions in Borderlands 3. Here's the details of them. To which Randy Pitchford had a Twitter meltdown and asked why Game Informer...
What he should have said was, there's no loot boxes or... And there's no, we haven't extended this game with grindy mechanics that you can pay to get.
If he just simply said what he should have done, exactly. I misspoke. My apologies that I got across confusingly. Yeah, there's going to be some small cosmetic items that will be purchased for money.
What did he say, Dan? What did he say instead?
He said, "Yeah, f- you guys," or something like that.
No. He said, "Game Informer, why are you guys trying to f- me?"
Wasn't it, why are you trying to fuck me on this or something?
So that's the start of the May Madness of Randy Pitchford. The second part is that fans noticed at the preview event trailer that the voice of Claptrap seemed different to the previous iterations from Borderlands, Borderlands 2, and Tales from the Borderlands. And they reached out to David Eddins, I believe the guy's name is, who was an employee of Gearbox who happened to voice Claptrap originally. He wasn't a professional voice actor by any stretch of the imagination. To which he's tweeted out and said, yeah, I'm not voicing Claptrap anymore. I don't work for Gearbox anymore. And then when I've asked for money to be hired as a professional voice actor, they don't wish to pay me. That's too expensive. Go figure. So coincidentally, Jim Forunder is the new voice of Claptrap, by the way. He is a professional voiceover actor. So, hey. Randy Pitchford has then come out and said that they did offer money and a contract to Eddings, a generous offer, which over the course of several tweets, he said was 2 times the scale of what it normally would be, to which was turned down. And David Eddings has followed this up and stated, Dan, do you want to read this tweet?
I ultimately offered to do it for, quote, free, unquote, in exchange for past royalties owed, plus an apology for something I've never spoken about publicly until now. Randy physically assaulted me in the lobby of the Marriott Marquis at GDC 2017. Personally, I think Randy's been on tilt the past few years. He's not the victim he portrays himself to be. I even blocked him a couple of years ago for stalking me on social media. Enough is enough. It's nice not feeling the need to spot any sleight of hand these days or wonder if the card was chosen or forced. I'm happy to be free from the half-truths and full-on deceptions, and thankful to no longer hear people refer to as muggles like a con man refers to a mark.
Yeah. Oh, if you didn't know, Randy Pitchford's a magician.
Yes. Yes. Which house? Slytherin, most probably.
So the issue here, obviously, is Randy Pitchford potentially assaulting one of his former employees while he was still employed. The other issue here is as well that, you know, what Gearbox tend to do, by the sounds of it, is they will get regular employees to do some voice acting work in the Borderlands games, and they won't get paid for that. It's just a thing they do. Some are happy to do it.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, some are happy to do it, some aren't so happy to have done it and not got any kind of recognition for it other than their name in credits. But then the other thing as well is, you know, over the past few years, we've had issues with, the voice actors not getting their recognition, not getting their due diligence, not getting their correct payments and all this kind of stuff. And it went to boiling point where we had the big voiceover strike. Was that 2 years ago now, I think it was?
Yes.
Yeah, and seemingly Gearbox, that's a unionized job now in the US that professional voice actors don't get employment because it goes to the unemployed employees, you know?
The unemployed employees.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to think of a better way to say that.
There is one thing, you know, everyone, we've all been in situations where we've had to do something a little above and beyond our job description for just to help. Keep the wheels greased, that's one thing. But especially bearing in mind what an iconic character Claptrap became for the series.
Like, other than Handsome Jack, he is probably the biggest character in Borderlands, the series.
That there was no recognition of that, nor no reward for it. It was just like, well, it's a perk of the job, you get to see your name in lights, deal with it. You know, that is a dick move. I'm sorry. That is a dick move. always do wonder if something else is going on when, and this is a very serious allegation that's being made against Randy Pitchford, and if it is true, that's truly abhorrent. But it is, I do always wonder when these big allegations just get dropped as an aside all of a sudden when something is receiving a lot of attention. It does make you wonder, doesn't it? It's like, well, why bring this up now?
I'm not saying there's, you know, there's no smoke without fire necessarily, but in this case, like, there's some fairly, like, weird things going on. Like, the fact that this guy doesn't work there anymore, seemingly didn't get paid for doing the Claptrap stuff. We agree that's all not quite right, no? And then add into the fact that they were already, like, throwing twice the money at him for some reason. That kind of says that they know that they need to do something to try and get him on board already. So you imagine that there was something they need to make up for in that case, possibly. Or it just came out in negotiating. I don't know. I'm not necessarily, you know, saying that's the case, but it looks a bit odd anyway. But yeah, like, I mean, there's definitely something odd going on with Randy Pitchford at the moment, generally. You know, like, in the last few years, he's had a few rants at, like, a few journalists. The Informer thing wasn't the first time. He's gone off on Jim Sterling a couple of times. But yeah, generally, he doesn't come off well in those conversations, and he's not coming across well in Twitter in the last week or so. And it's really a shame because it seems to be doing more harm than good for his game at the moment, kind of thing. I mean, like,
yeah, and you got to wonder where 2K stand in all of this, because they're not a small company and they are not, you know, they have some clout and some money behind them. Is it just that maybe, is Borderlands that big an earner that they've got, that Gearbox has their name all tied around the license and they can't do anything with it? Why Randy Pitchford?
And right, on a slightly lighter note, but still with a tinge of seriousness, if you were trying to convince the world that you're not an unhinged creep, I wouldn't come out and do a magic trick to the world. I'm just saying, like, that's not the thing I'd lead with.
Watch this $2 million. Watch this $2 million. It's gone.
It's turned into $12 million. Oh, what's going to happen to this? Oh, wait. It's gone. It's mysteriously disappeared.
Wait, what's no that in my where? Bank account? Allegedly. But yes, we have fun over horrible news. But
yeah, it's just one horrible thing after another. It makes you, I don't know about you, but there's times this week where I'm being like, I'm not even sure if I like the fact that I like video games at the moment, kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, you feel guilty for the liking the games that these people have been put under these conditions to make real, kind of thing. You know, like, I might not complain about deadline, you know, a delay again.
Can we just go back to the summer of 2016 where everyone was happy and playing Pokemon Go?
Man, I miss people. I miss seeing people wandering around with 15 mobile phones on their person just to try.
Anyway, that's our headlines this week.
All sad. I wish better for all of them.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it just amazes me that people are just such dicks to each other, just so unnecessarily. And, you know, that's a very glib way to put it, because there's some very profoundly wrong things being done by senior individuals to their employees here. And none of that is right. And I just don't understand how they haven't been... Well, I do understand, because, you know, you don't want to be a whistleblower, but, you know, it's just so wrong that this is able to carry on the kind of... Especially at Riot Games, you know, kind of, for, if the reports are true, which I'm sure they are, the undercurrent of just pure sexism and discrimination, and about it being kind of, you know, almost like a bloody fraternity bro house, it's just ridiculous.
That's that case in the Riot Games instance, but for me, the overall thing is just, it's an inability to treat other people as the human beings with the respect that you yourself should be wanting to other people to treat you, so you should treat them with that respect. It's like basic human decency.
Absolutely.
But of course, like, we'll keep our eye out on what's going on with these stories and try update where necessary. When some news, if any, comes out about results following these things.
I hope for positive news for it, but hey.
Do you want some positive news?
Let's get some positive news, Mr. Coleman.
I like positive news.
Okay, Dan got his wish. Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie, He Gran Turismo'd it. He complained about it, and changes were made.
That is a throwback reference. A lot of people hated me for my dislike of a Gran Turismo demo. lot of people.
So not just Dan, but a lot of people on the internet, they voiced their concern and disgust and other...
I didn't voice my concern. I said it was nightmare.
Well, there you go. About the new look of Sonic the Hedgehog in the Sonic the Hedgehog movie from Paramount, and...
Don't wait, I'm having a flashback.
So the director, Jeff Fowler, he took to Twitter and said, thank you for the support and the criticism. The message is loud and clear. You aren't happy with the design and you want changes. It's going to happen. Everyone at Paramount Sega are fully committed to making this character the best he can be. Hashtag Sonic movie. Hashtag got to fix fast.
To be fair, if you've been anywhere near the Anthem subreddit, you don't believe statements like that. No, but to be fair, though, I mean, that's me being glib. But, you know, that is the way you own it.
But the problem we have here is, in relation to the previous stories, this movie's out in 6 months. If they're keeping that deadline...
Which they haven't announced the delay to the deadline, and I bet they won't.
Are there going to be some poor animators crunch time here?
So basically, Dan... You just caused the conditions that we complained about with your hate. Of his face.
But, mate, have you seen
judging
his face?
Judging on looks and looks alone.
No, but did you see his face?
Yeah, it's horrible.
I thought he was beautiful.
Really? No, it's hideous. Like, just with the... Like, there were so many examples of just... little tweaks that you could do to make it infinitely better. Like, you just had to make his eyes a bit bigger. That's it. Like, that was it. Fine.
I found the way to make it acceptable was to put Vaseline on my eyeballs.
On your actual eyeballs.
On my actual eyeballs. Don't do that at home, kids.
Yeah, no, but, like, many people made modifications. Like, the eyes were enough to just make it look enough, like, not something that came out of a nightmare, as you said, Dan. But, yeah, like, I don't know what they were thinking. But, again... This is like management and, you know, like creative people level making a weird ass decision that now needs to get reversed and is going to lead to people that are probably on the lower end of the pay grades having to do a crap load more work in a short amount of time.
Yeah, or I mean that does sadly is the likely outcome. I mean if they're not refilming or redoing anything, I'd imagine the cheapest way out of this is just to kind of just change where the anchor points of the model are and just reshape its face, which would potentially look a bit weird.
Just do that.
Doesn't have to go through, like, several different design studios and several layers of stuff.
Drag out the previous model, stick in the new one, it'll be fine.
No, dude, you'd be surprised how many people do that. And they just go, fuck it, it'll do.
Unless this was a very well-planned and elaborate marketing ploy.
No, that's ridiculous.
And they were
going
to do the bigger eyes the whole time.
No, I've heard this, and that is a ridiculous sentiment. Anyway, we're going to move on because we're going to be stuck on Sonic otherwise. EA Access is coming to PlayStation 4 in July. So
I'd forgotten that was a thing.
Yeah, so did I until I realised that it was taking money out of my bank account because I didn't know how to cancel it.
Hey, do you remember? I talked about this a couple of years ago. I was like, how the f*** do I cancel this goddamn thing coming out of my bloody Microsoft wallet?
No, you're still paying for it. You didn't know.
Am I? Great.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Still, you didn't know. So if you didn't know, the EA Access, it's a bit like Games with Gold. It's a bit like PlayStation Now. It gives you access to a bunch of games in the EA Vault, like Battlefield and FIFA and Madden and Star Wars Battlefront.
Can I just say that what is very noticeable by its absence in this press statement is Anthem.
Although that's currently £35 at the moment on the PlayStation 4.
And it's still
4,
a terrible deal.
Anyway. So you can play a bunch of games from the EA Vault for a subscription each month, which is $3.99 in the UK for a month, or you can pay a yearly price of $19.99.
Do you know what? You could do a lot worse than paying $3.99 a month. They've got quite a lot of stuff in their back catalogue. I'm not condoning EA and saying you should throw lots of money at them, but if you're jonesing for stuff to play, there is a reasonable amount of pretty good stuff in that back catalogue.
Also, on top of that, you get a 10% discount on EA game purchases, expansions, and in-game items, though they don't say if that's stackable with the discounts that you receive through PlayStation Plus when it comes to the PlayStation. So you can also get 10 hours of new games, which, you know, so a new game comes out, and you might get to play it early, you get to play it for 10 hours, and then after that, you have to pay for it. It's not a bad deal. A little bit wasted on me, I found, when I went for EA Access, because most of the stuff in the vault was sports stuff that I didn't really play anyway, but hey.
See, I might get more out of it, but hey.
Yeah, at the moment, so this is coming in July, and at the moment it looks like if you're paying for the subscription on Xbox One, that doesn't carry over to the PS4 and vice versa. So
of course it doesn't.
Paying for separate subscriptions on each console.
And I bet you it doesn't carry over if you're paying for it on PC either.
Yeah, I'm actually tempted, just because for £20 they'll give me access to FIFA that I'm generally not buying at the moment, but wouldn't mind having access to every now and again. And then
yeah, or you could even do, I mean, a number of people just dip in for, like, if there's a release they're kind of interested in, that they'll dip into it. Certainly on the PC, they'll dip into like a month of the Premier membership, which I don't think is an option on consoles.
Yeah, a mate of mine, he'll get the 10 hours of FIFA when that comes out, and then they take it off. He runs out of his 10 hours, and then later on in the year, they go, okay, EA's free now. FIFA's in the subscription now. You can play that all you want, and then
that'd
go
be
back
perfect
to
for me. Yeah, that's yeah. Good.
It's good, Tim. Good Tim time, that.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. EA Access coming to PlayStation 4 in July, so you can do what the Xboxes do, and EA Origin and all that stuff. And lastly, in kind of place of, we can't talk about the PlayStation State of Play stream, because that happens tonight when we're recording, so that will already have happened by the time this podcast comes out. And
thanks,
also,
Sony.
The Ubisoft Ghost Recon reveal stream is happening tonight we're recording as well. So we've got things to watch after this show, but we can't talk about them right now because they haven't happened yet. Because that's
how
time works.
No, we are not time travelers.
Yeah, but we can talk about Lionsgate and publisher Good Shepherd Entertainment have teamed with Mike Bithell, and they are releasing a John Wick game called John Wick Hex.
This sounds like it could be amazing.
Did you guys watch the trailer?
Yes.
That is a very stylistic trailer, and all I could see was, I think John Wick's in Volume killing everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a bit, isn't it?
Yeah. But I like Volume, so that'll work for me.
Yeah, well, it looks like they've taken that formula and put a bit of a spin on it that, you know, suits his kind of, yeah, will suit doing, like, stylistic gun. Do they call it gung-fu at some point? I think they referred to it as, no, gung-fu.
It's gung-fu in the first one. I think it's car-fu in the second one, and the third one is dog-fu.
Got a dog.
It's got a dog that attacks people, innit?
He's got a dog that attacks people, innit?
I don't know about you, I thought this was good news for Mike Bithell, and also good news for us consumers of good video games.
Yes.
That's great news for Mike Bithell. I would say it's probably better news for Mike Bithell and Flush. I'm always pleased to see new Mike Bithell stuff in the pipeline, but yeah, good for him.
Well, this is the first time he's worked with someone else's IP as well, right? Normally he's created his own universe and he's done well at that, but it'll be interesting to see what he does with a known protagonist and spinning out from that point.
And it's always good to see someone getting kicked in the nuts on the trailer.
I would be really interested to know how the relationship came about between Mike Bithell and Good Shepherd and Lionsgate. If only there were a podcast that had interviewed him on a couple of occasions and could probably get him back one day.
Yep, maybe. He might be busy for the next year or so.
I'm guessing so.
I've got a feeling that might be the case.
Yeah. So I look forward to reading it on IGN or something. Yeah. Anyway, that's all the news we got.
Hey! Hey!
We did it, guys.
Yeah! Woo! So we'll talk about what we've done played. Coleman.
Yes.
You have played a preview build of something. Tell me about the preview. Was this the thing you were teasing me with last week?
This is the thing I was teasing last week.
God damn it.
On the 25th of April, before recording this here show, I went off to...
A day that you'll live in infamy.
I went off to Bandai Namco's offices in London yet again. They haven't figured
they
out how to lock the
in.
Door yet. Yeah, they haven't figured it out. I just turn up and they go... Name, go Chris Com. You're not on the list. I know. Just let me in. What are you doing today? Code Vein. So yeah, I went to go check out Code Vein. If you didn't know, we've spoken about this on the show before. Me and Tim went to go play this following a post E3 meetup last year. just under a year ago, in fact, and we went to play a bunch of games, and Code Vein being one of them. Code Vein is a Souls-like that has got a very high anime gloss to it, and it's all about vampires.
Uh-huh.
Have I not hooked you?
No. Well, to be honest, like I kind of liked it, but I didn't love it, and it was definitely more your sort of game.
Yeah, that was
it. I think it's certainly... I don't know. What's unique about it? Tell me what's unique. What does this bring to the table?
Vampires.
Lots of very... No, okay.
Anime.
Right. Okay.
Anime vampires.
Right.
Vaname.
Vaname.
Umpires.
Wow. Umpires? It's a full contact cricket game, is what you're saying.
I'm creating a new genre.
Right, okay, good.
Anyway, we went to go play this. Tim didn't like it very much. I really liked it, but at the same time,
I liked it, but just not...
Oh, sorry. Tim liked it, but didn't think it was his kind of game. I thought this was perfectly my kind of game, because I love Souls-likes, but at the same time, I suck at them. And I really sucked at that first playthrough. Going back and trying it again, I was much more pleasantly surprised by it. I don't know if it's because I've gotten into Sekiro... Shadows Die twice recently,
right,
and have been playing that a lot, or if it's just because I came back and the AI balance has changed and the game difficulty has changed and stuff. But this game is making much bigger strides than we saw it in a previous version. The previous version we went, there was a lot of flickering and weird stuttering to the game. It was very hard and very easy to fall off platforms, and you know, really weird stuff to a game of this type that can be infuriating.
Yeah, was the level design much different from the level that we saw before?
Completely different level from what we saw before. The design was very different as well. There wasn't as many platforms to fall off, and if you could fall off a section, it seemed obvious that you were going to do it, you know? There wasn't much way of accidentally like rolling off an edge or something. It would be something you were trying to do. So that was one of the big improvements from it. I also found I got to play around with the system a lot more, so... They let me play through, first of all, like a creator suite, which I love me a creator suite. At the same time, I'm starting to notice what I will say is becoming a trend in my eyes of Japanese video games with creator suites, and that is the lack of a bald option. My people have been underrepresented once again. Can't have a bald character in Code Vein. Wasn't happy about that, so I just went with a stock guy. I found the silliest one I could find. It was a dude with an afro and stuff, but he looked pretty cool.
So basically, if you can't have a bald dude, go the complete opposite.
go big or go home, you know?
Right.
Sounds good.
And where are you at the moment?
Home.
Yeah, there we go.
Shut up. Anyway, so I went through the creator suite, and then I got to try out the tutorial, which... the tutorial mode gave me more insight into how this game runs in comparison to just being thrown into the game like last time. So the big thing in this game is you are a revenant, which is anime code for vampire, and you have powers known as blood codes, which are basically combat styles.
Wait. Are they blood codes because they're vampires?
Yes, and it's encoded into your blood. I don't know. It doesn't really explain that bit. But
so
anyway.
Hang on. So you're a vampire who sucks his own blood?
No.
No.
Where'd that come from?
He didn't say that, did he?
Oh, no. What are you doing? He said, well, it's your blood.
Dan's fantasizing again.
I don't know.
Does like some vampire fanfic. Yeah.
Love it.
Anyway.
It's brilliant.
In the demo, there was three different blood codes: fighter, ranger, and caster. So that's obviously a melee fighter.
Is it a podcaster? Is
no.
it Tim? Does,
no.
he, does he make enemies slip into coma by speaking at them?
You don't basically to the. That sounds very similar to the animation, the old one that we had before, where you guys were in Pokemon and Tim could basically his opponents. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So you got fighter, which is melee fighter, also has the ability to hold larger weapons like giant clubs and stuff. You've got a ranger, which will give you the ability to use range weapons and give you some perks with that as well. And also you've got a caster, which allows you to use magic abilities like firing flames and some also other special abilities around that. So one, I chose the caster, and I flipping loved playing as a caster. Also, I think there's new blood codes that you'll get in the game as you progress, but it was just three in the demo that I played. Using the caster, you had this really cool ability that you could basically kill anyone with one move, but it would sup like most of your health away. So it was a nice little desperation.
So you are drinking your own blood?
No!
Yes!
No!
Not throwing buckets of his own blood at people.
I bet you are.
In the demo, went through the tutorial, all great, went into the main demo that they set up, and so you're in kind of like a desolate-looking city with lots of, I don't know, weird kind of destruction that's made with things that are looking quite organic and black and gross-looking. Bit like, what's the one I'm thinking of? Prototype. Kind of prototype-looking stuff. Yeah, that kind of look to the city. And I'm running around, captured by another gang of vampires that want me to go out and find these things called blood beads, which are blood in a bead, basically. And
that's what it says on the tin. Ron Seal quick drying blood beads.
game at its heart. You watch this game as you would with any Souls, like you'll watch the footage for this and go, hey, this looks like Dark Souls, but it really doesn't feel like Dark Souls. It's a lot quicker. It feels more akin to Bloodborne, where it doesn't feel like a really hard RPG. It feels like a really hard hack and slash, which I prefer much more. As well, it's got that kind of Bloodborne thing of having different lots and lots of different weapons to pick from, and I think they're modular weapons as well. I don't know, that wasn't reflected in the demo, but I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere. I'm not sure. We'll have to see. And using all the different abilities as well is what made it fun. And combat's pretty similar to any bog standard Souls like, but as well as the roll mechanic that's there in every series, you also have a block mechanic, which is pretty useless against bosses. And then you have a myriad of giant bosses to take on, which one is in my footage that I captured from the event, but the kind of setup and explanation for that boss isn't there because it's a big spoiler in the game, apparently, so I had to cut it out.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway, what this basically turned me around from was me going, I like this game. I don't think I'll pick it up. It might be I'll pick this up when it's reduced kind of thing. Because it just seems like quite a glitchy Souls-like. Plus, it was due to come out pretty soon after we played the version we did just under a year ago.
Was it? Okay, I didn't realize
that. I think it was coming out that October, and we played it in July, and they pushed it back to this year sometime, of which we still don't have a release date, but it's still down as 2019 currently.
Right.
It turned my opinion around from going, yeah, I might pick this up when it's on the cheap and some improvements have been done to it and stuff when it comes out, to I really want this day one. I really want to play this game.
Cool.
Especially after getting into Sekiro more and going back and doing some more Bloodborne, I can't wait to play some Code Vein, even though, because it is an anime-style game, I can't follow the storyline.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm saying something.
Yeah, I'm really bad with anime storylines, but hey.
To be fair, I think most people are. It's just like, wait, what? Okay, so no, I'm out. All right, let me just stab the things in the face.
Yeah.
I think is pretty much where you're going to be.
There isn't a release date yet, but they are doing a network test soon, which will allow it's to test out the co-op capabilities of the game, because that's the thing I've completely forgot to talk about, even though it's its defining feature. You will always have a companion with you, be that CPU or other player. And at some points, it's a little bit annoying, because I did find with the CPU character, you come into a fight and you'd figure out how you're going to approach this enemy, as you do in a Souls-like, and the other guy just runs up and goes, done it! And you're like, oh, I was going to take them out and make it look really cool and stuff. Fine, whatever. But the idea of playing that with another person is what's intriguing me. So they're going to do a network test to test out the co-op capabilities. And if you want to look that up, it's on the Bandai Namco official site. It's got a really long URL, so I found it best to just Google Code Vein network test, and it will pop up on the right page. Alternatively, if you go to bigredbarrel.com, my preview is up. I've written a few words on it, and also there are videos embedded into the article. But at the very bottom there is a link to the network test sign-up page, so you can go register your interest right there.
Go do that.
Yeah, but I'm really looking forward to this, and I'm pretty sure I'll be able to give it a proper review when it comes out.
Sweet. And remind me when that's out.
2019, Dan.
Sometime this year.
I know. I know you said 2019, but just in case people were wondering, I've done it before. I snooze off in a podcast like I might have just done. and sometimes need a little cheeky reminder.
It's okay when you're listening, Dan, not when you're actually hosting.
What? Who are you?
Exactly.
Yes.
But also, I did hear you last week talking about SteamWorld Quest as well. The one thing I did do with my time off is finish that game.
Bizarre.
So, yeah, I've actually played that all the way through.
So what do you think, Tim? Tell me about the menus.
I'd go as far as saying I really like it. I really like the major parts of the gameplay, the actual interplay of the cards and the decks. I didn't really suffer the difficulty spike thing that you hit, but like, I don't know. I went back and did a couple of levels early on and then never really went back and did stuff. Like, I just played through. For me, it didn't seem quite as hard as SteamWorld Heist. I don't know how far through you are and what you were saying. It may just be because I'm used to, you know, deck building games and min-maxing them and getting the best out of, yeah, each deck and then how those people interact with other people. And just, yeah, anyway, I liked all the tactical side of the deck building and the actual, like, combat and all that type of stuff. I would say that combat seemed to take a bit long, especially with some of the bosses, and I was a little bit disappointed with the last boss of the game. I thought it was a bit underwhelming. But generally, like, combat and that side of things, I really enjoyed. But like, I accept some of the stuff you were saying last week, like the wandering around the levels. Like, I enjoyed the story and the world, but I didn't need to wander around slightly boring designed levels. As you said, they seemed a bit bland and square, and I wanted to wander around those to find the rewards because they give you like quite good cards that are actually quite handy to have, and just if you don't find them, you just don't get them basically. So yeah, like I was motivated to do them by the reward, but not by, as you say, like the level design itself seemed a bit bland. And I actually preferred the approach in the game that I spoke about recently, Monster Slayers. I keep on forgetting the name because it's so generic, but yeah, that had a system where you pick the thing you go to, you get to see the type of thing that you're going to fight, and you just go there and fight them. There's no, you just pick the location. And that to me, just it made the whole, sped that whole thing up a bit, which meant that it wouldn't have mattered as much that the combat was a bit slow. I know you can fast forward it, but I kind of like to see what happens in the combat as you're going and you know, adjust to what I'm battling and stuff as well. But yeah, like, look, I enjoyed it enough to play it all the way to completion. I would say I didn't like it quite as much as Heist, and I think that was because Heist had a very different approach to gameplay, whereas this is something I was more familiar with, and the extra things that it put around it felt a bit superfluous and added out. I also don't think it was as long. As I said, I didn't go back and do as many levels as I did in SteamWorld Heist, which I found necessary in that game to, like, you go back and, oh, I'll go back there and I think I'll be able to get through there again and get a bit more money so I can afford this thing. And that didn't seem necessary to me in this game. Like, there was stuff I didn't buy, but I didn't feel, like, impeded by not having access to it, sort of thing. But,
What I've kind of loved before with the SteamWorld games is kind of that, like, the unique character load had. And I don't know whether or not it's just SteamWorld perhaps being slightly overdone now. But it didn't really have the same kind of quirky, unique feel to me. I didn't think, oh, this is a fun little jape like I did with Heist and Dig.
Yeah, it didn't seem... I like, there's a jovial element to it, but it didn't seem quite as... like, the characters don't seem as well defined. No, I don't know. There's something about the characters I just don't like as much as the other ones, I think, is part of the thing. There was a ragtag bunch of different characters in the last one, and whereas they've got different character traits, they all came together and coalesced as one a bit too much type of thing. It was just the five different flavours of the people in the thing rather than five different individual, I don't know, like they're well characterized in the game, but there's something about the just lacked the likeableness of some of the characters in the previous game, I think, for me.
And some bits I almost feel like they were trying a bit too hard.
Mm.
You know? So, hey, we've got to be zany here. We've got a bit like what happened. It reminded me, although it wasn't quite as egregious as this, as like kind of the slightly weird direction of being a bit too aware of itself that Borderlands the pre-sequel was, for example.
Right, I never played that, but I get the idea of what you're trying to convey. Like, for instance, there was a bit where there was like just a woman stuck in a barrel, and there was seemingly no explanation of that going on as well. I do like, as I said, I like the world that they've built. It's my favorite, like, set up in a framed narrative, Dan. You didn't mention that last week, but it's literally like an old man robot telling a fantastical tale as a bedtime story to his kid, and like that's literally the way it's all set up. So like, yeah, and they don't really come back on that too much, but then I do like the general tale that they tell in that universe. And overall, I think it was an interesting story and well done. But yeah, I didn't identify or connect with the characters as much as I did in the previous game. Like, I very much felt that the captain in that game was a manifestation of me and the rest of the crew and my crewmates. Whereas in this game, Amelie is the main character. Like, I don't know, I didn't identify with that person as much, or that character. I didn't dislike them, but I didn't feel that was a representation of me. I felt it was that character type of thing. I mean, and as I said, anyway, but look, it's me slightly picking hairs. Like, I really like the game enough to complete it. And
picking
the basic
hairs.
Splitting hairs is probably what I meant to say, sorry.
That is a bizarre mixed metaphor. Yeah. I was just sitting around picking some hairs. Well, good for
splitting
you, Tim.
Hairs.
But you should use an exfoliating skin wash is what you should really do.
No, but to come back to the basic gameplay and the universal stuff, I had an enjoyable time in it, and the combat and deck building stuff is to a really high standard and like well polished and well done and tactically interesting and stuff like that. And yeah, like I know what you're saying with one of the people get KO'd and stuff like that, but there are ways to manage around that, and there are, you know, the items that you can buy to resurrect people and stuff as well. So once you've got enough of those, it becomes a bit easy in places, almost, kind of thing. But yeah, like as I said, overall, I enjoyed it. I just found I had more criticisms to level against it than I did their previous game, basically.
Did we just get through a whole Tim reviewing Steam World Quest without one single mention of Dick?
No, I did slip it in.
Oh, right, sorry.
Oh.
I did when he was talking about min-maxing.
You just slipped in the dick.
When
listening to last week's episode, I was like, oh, right, so you don't mention the dick when Dan's talking about it, then I'll fight, and then you did it. I was like, oh, good, Coleman, at least I can rely on you to be, you know, an ever-present in nonsense.
No, not everyone gets the dick, just for you, Tim.
Okay. Yes.
Just
you
the
tip.
Gave it to Dan last week, so you can't give it to me this week.
Hey, look, he said I was special.
Not
right?
Until it's been washed, at least, anyway.
Can I just add something quick from last week?
Yes.
Dick. No.
Nice.
Days Gone, I'm still playing it.
Really?
Yes. I really, really like it.
Have been shouting that it has sold very well in Japan.
Yeah. I've gone from going, hey, this game's all right, to going, I flipping love this game.
Yeah. That's a good turnaround. I'm glad to hear that, because we poo-pooed on it for ages.
Yeah, I mean, what made you kind of come around to it, Coleman?
Basically, if you ignore all the critics and just play this game, and you really like the idea of going through an open world and being Daryl from The Walking Dead, you can totally do that. You just drive around on a motorbike, you've got a crossbow, you can shoot zombies in the head, walk up, take the bolt back, and then go off to the next one. It's flipping brilliant. And then when I was talking about hordes and stuff last week, I thought hordes were like 50 zombies. No, hordes are like 300 to 500 zombies. I found one. It terrified the crap out of me.
Fair enough.
It was like, hey, you got to go to this mission marker and go save a person. Like, all right, I guess I go kill some zombies. This will be fun. And I've stopped calling them freakers now. Like, they don't even call freakers in the game. It's just a marketing ploy. You drive up to a point, and I go up to the point, and the hordes are completely random. So I go, here's my marker, starts the mission. And then, like, 300 flipping zombies just come running down a hill. And I only saw like one or two coming at me. I went, oh, I better get off my bike and kill these zombies. And then they just all steamrolled me. It was brilliant. This game is great. I love it.
Can't believe you just used the Z word that many times, Colin.
Oh, so good. So good. And one of the things I found really funny, like, I'm not going to name names. I was listening to a podcast this week. They were talking about their impressions of Days Gone. And I think only one of them was playing it for review. So they kind of had a reason to be playing it a long time. And the other two were just talking about that they were playing it. Hmm. And they were going, oh, yeah, it's so contrived. The other game, oh, yeah, it's really boring. Oh, world's really dull and rubber. Like all the real, you know, all the complaints you've heard a million times before. And then they go to, well, how far are you in the game? Oh, about 45 hours. 45 hours! And you're saying it's a rubbish game? Why are you playing it?
Yeah.
There's like, this game isn't amazing, but it's got like the things it does are amazing, you know? It's got a one or two good tricks, and if those tricks are enough to keep you entertained, this is a worthwhile game. I love this game. No buyer's remorse whatsoever.
Oh, good for you.
That is good. Always good. I might pick it up when it becomes cheap, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Anyway, just wanted to add that on. I listened back last week and I went, yeah, I'm really not giving this game the love that I've come to show for this game.
For it, yeah.
Splendid.
Yes.
Splendid. Well, I think that is it. I haven't really played much this week, so I don't really have anything to say other than new gun in Destiny.
Shouting at cat off mic simulator.
Yeah, exactly. God damn it, he's being a dickhead. I mean, I love him. He's a lovely cat, but god damn it, he's a dickhead.
Yeah. No, he's a cat. That's what we do.
I know, right.
It's kind of like in their DNA.
There was a Starlink update, which I had a little play about with, but kind of left alone quickly after because I realised
that is the right decision.
That the Star Fox is all paid. The Star Fox extra content is all paid DLC, and it's mostly just three extra pilots and 1 hour of gameplay. And I'm not prepared to pay like £9.50 for that.
So that sounds like the right shout.
If only there was a podcast that could have warned you about this 2 weeks ago. Oh no, wait.
Oh wait.
Oh wait.
Right.
Wrap up.
Yeah. Tuesday is Tuesday.
Tuesday is a Tuesday indeed. Yeah, we had a fun week last week. Honeycombs was our feature game of the week, and that went down pretty well. And this week's game is a game called Crystal Hall. And it looks like, and I'm hoping this is the case, but it's a kind of adventure game, and it looks kind of easy to access and easy to pick up and play, like kind of reasonably accessible. But it's highly rated on Board Game Geek for them as well, for this type of game as well, I think. So yeah, should be a good one to come along and play. And if you didn't know, each and every week we do an event called Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Dalston. And if
that
you play,
is brand new information.
Yeah, and if you play the feature game of the week, you can possibly win a copy just by playing it that evening. We do a free prize draw at the end of the night, and anyone that's tried out the game that evening can possibly win a copy at the end of the night. So yeah, it's a really nice way to get introduced to new games and new people that play them and possibly win a copy just by doing so. So you are welcome to come along and join us. It's every week, as I said, in the Loading Bar in Dalston. There is more information on the top left hand corner of bigredbarrel.com, or you can come and join the over 1,750 people that are in our meetup group. Search for Tabletop Tuesday bacon. On meetup.com. Not that sort of meat, Dan.
Meat.
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 Sausages.
Moist.
Sausages.
Sausages.
Meat. Meat. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. So I think all that's left now that Tim's reminded us of how the day Tuesday works is just say thank you to a couple of people. And from Facebook, I'd like to say thank you to Freya Goddard and the demon Ed Price.
These wrestling nicknames doing anything for you?
And I'd also like to thank Mr. Will Driver, who is apparently, he's been spreading the good word of BRB UK, it says in the agenda, but how has that been?
When we say tell your friends, he's been telling his friends on Twitter.
Amazing. I'm going to look at the podcast stats now.
Good.
Did it help?
And also Richard Kirk. Thank you very much.
Hey, and thank you to no one. I got left no one. No one.
No one.
Leave me anyone to read out. Thank you, me. Lovely agenda.
Great, good.
Yeah, you did a really good agenda, Coleman. Thank you. And thank you, Coleman.
Knocked it out of the park.
Good job editing. I'm sure you'll be editing for until about 2 in the morning, so that'll be great.
Yep.
Thank you, Coleman.
Well done.
Nice. Work at 8. That'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. We don't talk about crunch here, Coleman,
Sorry.
Now, when did he start spreading the good word?
One day ago.
It's made bugger all difference.
Ah!
But keep trying, Will.
Thanks for trying. Now, everyone, tell your friends, tell your family. If you've got any older relatives who have a smartphone, then just subscribe on their phone. Yeah. So it'll automatically download.
They'll never know.
They won't know.
Do it when they're in... Set it to only doing a Wi-Fi zone. We'll be fine. It's all good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to receive a photo of my granddaughter, but it says all my memory's used up because of a podcast called BRBUK.
Bear Buck? What's this Bear Buck?
What's Bear Buck?
Bear Buck.
Good.
Lovely. Right. Okay, so that completely unnecessary impression of grandmothers will be the last thing you hear on this show now. So we're going to go. Thank you for listening to us. Make sure you head on over to BigRedBarrel.com or Twitter.com/BigRedBarrel or Facebook.com/BigRedBarrel. Or all of those places. You know, it's a free world. Do what you want. We should be back next week.
Good.
So, I have been Dan.
I might have actually been here this week.
I've still been Thumper Swift.
Oh, yeah, I've still been Inky Folly.
Yeah.
Whoa.
All right, Mr. November, you've got a whole bloody month.
Yeah.
In your cucumber-posing pants.
We got to find your Deacon St. John name. What's your what's your first pet's name and the name of the road you grew up in?
Snowy... I guess we go with Snowy Gardens.
Snowy Gardens.
Nice.
I like it.
Tim Hibbs is a silver fox.
This is November. This is like, you know, in Rocky IV, where they're in Vegas and they're doing all of Apollo Creed's names and they're going through all his different nicknames and it's just taking forever. This is going to be Tim by the end of the month. Yeah. We're going to have too many nicknames.
Well, I think Tim is more cocky ball blower than Rocky Balboa, but you know, there we go.
Whoa.
Dick.
Yeah, dick joke.
Yeah. Oh, dick.
Oh, dick.
Jeez.
Anyway, really going now. Thank you ever so much, ladies and gentlemen. And until next time, dear listeners, toodle-bye.
Your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.